Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
I picked was wearing that big bright green St. Louis Cardinals logo on his jersey, on his silks, and he started off in second to last, and he might have improved by a couple of places. Every year we watch the races. I try to watch the Triple Crown with my boys, and we don't do a lot. You know, we just kind of, we look at the horses walk in, we look at the odds, they pick a horse based on what name they think is cool, and then we watch the race. So it's a solid 5 minutes of excitement, because, you know, picking the horses, and then the race itself is usually about 2 minutes, right? And so in this case, you know, you had the extreme favorite at 5-2, just never really got there. And on the other hand, Medina Spirit started ahead, and, well, you know, if you know how this turns out...
With Central Quality begins to move on the far outside as they make their way around the far turn. Medina Spirit is still the leader here. And Mandaloon comes on the scene on the outside, a half length behind. The Central Quality has put the pressure. Hot Rod Shirley right in behind the leaders. Flavian Pratt asking him to go now as they make their way to the top of the stretch. Medina Spirit and Mandaloon are stride for stride. Hot Rod Shirley and a Central Quality closing on the outside. The four of them come into the final furlong. Mandaloon fighting for the front. Medina Spirit battles on. Hot Rod Shirley on the outside. A Central Quality on the far outside. The four of them coming to the finish in the Kentucky Derby. Here's the
seven wins. Man, that's unbelievable. Seven wins for a single guy doing the train. You know what I would like to see, Davis? I would like to see a competitive sports calling contest. And it would involve, I forget the guy's name who does the calls for all three of the Triple Crown races, but we'd like to have him. You need to have the guy who does the Nathan's hot dog eating contest. You know, the hype man. You know, you got to have him. Like, I would like to, you know, somebody from wrestling. Obviously, would have to be involved in this. But I'd like to see, you know, could we have the... And they, what they would do is you'd have them... It probably would be boring because they couldn't do it simultaneously. But I was thinking if they could all compete calling something like curling. You know, something that's just really, really boring by... curling's fun. Don't get you all worked up. But, you know, but something that doesn't have a lot of built-in drama where they really have to showcase the skill of manufacturing the excitement.
And the guy who does the Triple Crown races, like you said, I don't remember his name at all either.
They said his name.
They mention his name, but he's not exactly like the guy everyone talks about either until it's race time.
Right, right.
So Nathan's hot dog eating contest. Mike Emmert, who does NBC hockey, retired.
All right,
another solid voice.
Yeah.
Those are probably the best voices because they have to... speak so fast,
yeah,
and they can't stumble over their words. And the way that the guy does it from horse racing, it's just so electric.
It doesn't matter if he's winning by 20 lengths. he's excited. He's such a pro. The love, which is in a way, it's a kind of a lie, right? Like, you can't tell the drama on the track from the drama in the tone of his voice, because whatever's happening on the track is the most exciting thing that has ever happened in the history of sports. No matter how much of a blowout it would happen to be. But that's, I guess that's, you know, that's your professional job. It's your job is to make it interesting no matter what. 5:14 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Good morning. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Session is over. Yeah, they hit it on Friday. It's all done. You know, they did the thing. They banged the gavel. They said the magic words.
I'm rules chair. For what purpose?
Mr. President, I'm that the Senate adjourn sine die.
Oh, thank God it's over. 60 days. Too long.
Does Senator Farmer want to object? Without objection, the Senate concurs.
See, the reason that's funny is because Gary Farmer is doubly funny. That's a pretty good dig. Gary Farmer had been the Senate leader of the Democrats, a minority party. And Gary Farmer is famous for objecting at all the weirdest moments and, you know, just doing all these, like, unnecessary whatever, because he's, you know, when you're in the minority party, about a quarter of the legislature is the Democrats. In the Senate, it's a little bit more than that. I think it's more about a third these days. But in any case, Gary Farmer, who, you know, like I said, he's always the voice of the opposition, loud, a little bit obnoxious in the way he makes his points, certainly, you know, liberal to the core, right? But also recently unseated as the leader of the Democrats. Lauren Book is now going to take over. She's actually a much better candidate for the Democrats to be the winsome face and voice. I mean, she was so much as that she sat on the Parkland Commission and she, you know, was in favor of the Armed Guardian program. I mean, you know, so she's really the kind of Democrat that they need to be leading the Senate. But anyway, so it's kind of a funny dig, like, Senator Farmer, you want to object? As your last chance to do so as the leader of the Senate Democrats. 5:16 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. So sign to die, no recurring need to come back to me. Which is actually kind of funny because they are going to come back and meet on the gambling compact, which is a weird deal. I'll talk about this maybe later on in the show. But, you know, the gaming compact that Governor DeSantis has entered into with the Seminoles, now the legislature has to sign off on this. Here's what's weird about it. It would bring us an awful lot of money as a state. But there's a couple of things that are screwy, and I don't think it's illegal, but there are people who are saying it's illegal. The reason they say it's illegal, number one, is because what's going to happen is the Seminole tribe is going to they're going to have servers housed on Seminole land, and those servers are going to handle all of the sports betting, you know, baseball, basketball, hockey, football. They're going to handle all the boxing, racing, all the sports betting for the state. And they're going to enter into relationships with various, off-track betting or whatever kind of places where you can wager, and also on an app. And it's going to be geofenced so that you have to be within the state to do it. But they are going to be the ones running the gambling. And then we're going to take a big slice. I think it's like 14% of all the profits. There's all kinds of little restrictions built in. But here's what's weird about it. Okay, the federal, whatever the name of the institution is, there's a federal commission that oversees all of this stuff for gaming for the Indian tribes. They have to approve the deal. And the original concept of Indian gaming was on Indian land because they're an independent nation, right? They're not sovereign, or they are sovereign. They're not subject to the United States. And so they could have casinos because they were separate from the United States. Well, now and that's being preserved here because the servers are going to be housed on the Indian land. But the servers housed on Indian land, you can still gamble at those servers anywhere in the state, which means that it's not really on Indian land. It's all over the state of Florida. That's part one. Okay, that's one set of challenges. The other set of challenges has to do with the proposition that we passed in 2018 that says that any gambling expansion needs the approval of the voters before it can ever be allowed. So they didn't want to expand gaming in the state of Florida without getting permission from the voters. However, and this is clearly an expansion of gaming. I mean, clearly, if we're going to be able to gamble on sports anywhere through these paramutual or through the app, that's an expansion of gaming. But The 2018 amendment, which is Section 30 of the amendments in the Florida Constitution, very clearly says casino gambling. I mean, it is clearly about the expansion of casino gambling. So even though the authors of the amendment might have intended for voter approval before there'd be any expansion of any gaming in the state, what we actually voted on and ratified was voter approval required for expansion of casino gambling. And there is no shape or way in which this is casino gambling, even though it's the casino gambling expansion capability that is what is possible on Indian land. So this is, it's an interesting deal. I don't know that it's the best deal. The legislature has to ratify it. I expect they will in their special session coming up. But there are at least two different robust challenges that are going to be made against this deal once it actually gets put into place. 520 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. Radio 92.3 AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. if you're a company, be careful what you do as an April Fool's prank. I see the report up. The New York Post has a report up that the Securities and Exchange Commission is investigating Volkswagen over, remember the April Fool's Day prank that they did where they were, what was the name that they used? Suddenly it escapes me, but it was the, Volkswagen, that's
Volkswagen.
Right.
Volkswagen.
That they were going to rebrand as Volkswagen and go all electric. Now, it's still not clear to me to this day whether this was a deliberate prank or a really badly botched PR change. But in any case, apparently the SEC is now looking into that. Because that will, you know, April Fool's Day prank could have an effect on investor perception of your company, and people might have invested on the basis of what they thought was a real thing. Interesting. Interesting. We don't have that problem here. We're a news organization that makes really good jokes. Jokes. Once a year. And you can count on it. I promise you in advance next year there will be an April Fool's Day prank by me. And every single year, just expect it. Mark Jacobs in the newsroom with our headlines. Mark?
About 400 people expected to attend Andrew Brown Jr.'s funeral today in North Carolina. He was shot in his car as deputies were serving an arrest warrant. Protesters were out for a 12th day yesterday, demanding body cam video be released. The White House making it easier to get protected against coronavirus. There are now 40,000 pharmacies with the vaccine. Most have walk-in hours. There's also a text line to find a nearby location. That number is 468862. Hollywood mourning the death of an Oscar winner. Olympia Dukakis died over the weekend. Among her many roles, she starred in Steel Magnolias alongside Sally Field, Shirley MacLaine, Julia Roberts, and Dolly Parton.
Clary, I'm surprised at you talking about your kin that way.
As somebody always said, if you can't say anything nice about anybody, come sit by me.
Dukakis won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actress in Moonstruck. She was 89.
All right.
She was also the cousin of Michael Dukakis.
Right. Michael, the hat in the tank Dukakis.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And which was gained the rule of politics, which is? Never wear a hat in a picture. Can't go right. Can't work it. Yeah, I'm not sure that one picture did lose him the election, but it's one of those apocryphal, widely believed after the fact to have, because people like to be able to say that something, one thing, you know, I'm not sure that was
if
the one thing.
If we just hadn't done this.
Yeah. If only you hadn't let me take a picture looking like a doofus in tank, then that would have been okay. All right, Mark, thanks so much for the update. 525 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay.
Alec Bohm, the third baseman, plays a step behind the bag at about 15, 20 feet off the line. The pitch. Carpenter swings and hits a drive. Right field. This is back to the wall, and it is gone! A three-run homer. Carpenter hits a home run into the bullpen, and the Cardinals jump out on top. 3-1 in the fifth inning.
Okay, in and of itself, maybe not necessarily the most newsworthy thing that's ever happened in the history of baseball in the last week, but this was actually Thursday evening. Matt Carpenter playing for the Cardinals against the Phillies. Friday night, so that was a pinch hit, 3-run home run. Okay? Friday night against the Pirates.
The pitch to Carp. There's a swing and a fly ball hit deep right center field. That might go. It's a goner! 2 days in a row, Carpenter has hit a pinch hit, 3-run homer.
So 2 days in a row, you come in to pinch hit and you hit a home run. Davis, will you take that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a secret weapon right there.
That's outstanding. Here's what's weird about it. So Matt Carpenter has long been a mainstay of the Cardinals. The guy who can come in and get your doubles and your triples. And I mean, not as much triples, doubles all the time. He has been way off on his actual batting average. And here's what's weird about it. You pay attention to these numbers for a second. This was John Rooney, the caller for the Cardinals on KMOX, right before that second home run.
For Matt Carpenter, that home run yesterday was his fourth hit. Two of those home runs. He has two home runs, seven RBIs. Not all bad for a guy who's 4 out of 42.
So he would have been, after that home run, he would have been 5 out of 43 with three home runs.
So he's struggling, but not completely struggling.
Right. He's got five hits on the season out of 43, which is not good. But three of those five are home runs. Hello, American League. So, oh, and Davis, since we're kind of in the baseball moment here, you know how baseball is always full of weird plays?
Always.
Like, not every time you go to the baseball game are you going to see something you've never seen before, but routinely. In fact, it's so common that, you know, anyway, baseball is full of weirdness. And in order to understand this one, you understand that if the ball touches a player in fair territory and then does anything, it's still a fair ball. Okay, and if somebody interferes with that ball, if there's a fan or somebody like that, it becomes a ground rule double, which means that you get second base no matter what would have happened otherwise. Listen to this play.
64 degrees in Pittsburgh
tonight.
The
second pitch.
The first pitch at 6:35 p.m. Eastern time. The next pitch is rolled to the right side, and it's fair. Going off the first baseman's glove, Moran, and the ball person picked up the ball. Picked up a fair ball, and Tommy Edman goes into second with a leadoff double.
Oops.
The ball person?
Oops. Yes. So the ball went off the first baseman's glove in fair territory, deflected, and went down the line because it was going pretty fast, like over the bag off the first baseman's glove, and the ball boy picked it up. Fielded it on a hop. That's a double. That's a double.
Interference.
That's right.
All right.
Great play by the ball boy, but man number 10 does not get to participate in the plays.
Which happens. It does happen occasionally. It's hard to consider that a blunder. It's just one of those.
It's such a quick reaction, and obviously the ball boy is not exactly the paid professional that is ready to think of every single nuance in every single play. It's always funny when the ball boys get involved in stuff, or the ball hits their chairs, they're trying to pick it up, or they're scampering out of the way of a ball. Anyway, entertaining stuff. Funny, you never know what you're going to have at the ballpark. When are Wahoos? When do we start?
Oh, tomorrow, officially.
Yes.
At home next week.
Nice. I'll take it.
I'm Jim Chesko with Your Money Now. Even as the nation continues to emerge from last year's coronavirus pandemic lockdowns, the Transportation Security Administration today extended a federal requirement that travelers on buses, trains, and commercial flights wear face masks. The requirement was set to expire on May 11th and will now be in effect through September 13th. An industry group that represents most large U.S. carriers applauded the extension of the mask requirement. A good month for stocks. A couple of the indexes up more than 5%. But a down day to end it. Stocks lost ground in the Friday session, the Dow Jones Industrial Average retreating 185 points. With many people on lockdown much of the past year, the dating scene was much quieter than usual, which led to a slump in condom sales. Now, COVID-related safety restrictions continue to ease, and more people have gotten vaccinated, and things are picking up. New figures from research firm IRI show that in the 4 weeks ended April 18th, condom sales increased 23% from the same period a year ago. That's Your Money Now.
Thank you, Mr. President, and I thank you for giving me this privilege to chat with you and the body about a very important subject to me. 164 years ago, my uncle, St. stood on this same property dealing with the same issue that I'm going to talk about today.
Well, maybe uncle several removed, but this is Doug Broxson on the floor of the Senate talking about...
On July 17th, 1821, Escambia County became the first county in the state of Florida. It covered 80 miles to the east of us, to the Suwannee, and went to Pensacola. There was a second county, and it's ironic that the senator that sits next to me represents that same county, St. John's County, that went from Jacksonville to Key West.
So just a little bit of history for the folks in the Senate.
We were settled by the Spanish and ceded to the United States in 1821. As I said, Escambia was the first county. It's the longest standing county commission in the state.
I'll be honest, at this point, I was a little worried where this was going because I didn't know what he was doing. And I thought, maybe, is there some action being brought against the county commission?
First office of mayor, the first health department.
The answer is no.
It's the cradle of Navy aviation and the Navy Blue Angels. Trained the first female aviator and the first African-American female aviator.
So what was this all about exactly?
It's long known as the first place city and the western gate to the Sunshine State. But, Mr. President, my concern this morning is about a debate that's been going on 350 years. And that is, where is the oldest settlement in Florida?
Okay, so we're going to have this fight on the floor of the Senate. Is it us or is it St. Augustine?
My friend to my left here will declare to you that it's established that St. Augustine is the oldest.
Not according to Perfect Plain.
This debate raged for over 200 years. In fact, they could not, St. Augustine and Pensacola could not decide where the capital of Florida would be, whether it would be in Pensacola or St. Augustine. So what they did is they rotated every 2 years where one would be, the capital would be Pensacola, and then the capital would be St. Augustine.
This is such a weird system. I mean, that is a completely bizarre system, right? So then we settled it halfway in the middle.
Until they made a fateful decision that they would start the same day Pensacola moving with an expedition to the east, and St. Augustine would move to the west.
St. Petersburg would be a bit of a journey.
That would be the new capital. It's marked over here about two blocks. Legend is that we got there first and had to sit around eating half-shelled oysters and drinking Gatorade.
Okay. Gatorade was what, invented in the 70s, right, at UF? Is that right?
Yeah, around that time.
As the electrolyte replacement? All right, very good. Anyway, that's funny. So then, who was really the first? Again, it's a little bit of a history lesson for the Florida Senate.
But they finally decided where the capital would be. But that was not the issue. The issue, the underlying issue, was always the same. What was the oldest settlement, European settlement established in the U.S.? And let me tell you what happened. Let me walk back with you exactly what happened. In 1557, Don Tristan de Luna brought in 12 ships and he was looking for Pensacola, and I'll explain what happened in St. Augustine. But he came through the Pensacola Pass and landed about 6 miles where now the Pensacola Bay Bridge is. That was in 1557.
Well, where it should be anyway.
In 1561, a boat washed on the shore of St. Augustine, and they declared that that was the first settlement. So where's the dispute? Recently, the University of West Florida they have an archaeological...
Go Argos.
...department, and Dr. Judy Bentz, who's a former speaker of Bentz's sister,
began to explore what happened in 1861. In 1861, a hurricane came into the Pensacola Bay, and the word was that it destroyed 12 of those ships, all 12. But what we've discovered is, because we found 8 of them on the bottom of Pensacola Bay, that 4 survived and left to get new supplies, Don Tristan de Luna. Now, please, I want you to join with me. You cannot carry out in 4 ships what you brought in on 12. So we know that there were people left there on the shore creating the continuation of the oldest settlement in Florida. I've been over one of those ships. I know what it looks like. It's there.
Yeah, I'm not sure that argument is the one that's going to hold up in court, right? You know, the ship sank. In fact, they sank with all their stuff on it because you moved all the stuff back on the ships to prevent it from getting attacked by the natives, right? Anyway, so the 12 came in, 4 left. Therefore, obviously, people stayed. Dicey territory there. Nevertheless, this was an opportunity for Senator Broxton to tell what is his favorite joke to tell. If you've ever listened to him in circumstances where he gets a chance to talk about this, this is his favorite joke to tell.
I'm going to conclude with a story. I had this debate when I first came over here with a representative from St. Augustine on who was the oldest. And we, frankly, got into a fairly robust discussion to the point that it was an argument. And he said to me, Representative Broxton, I do not believe your information is correct. And I said to him, sir, when I get to heaven, I'll ask Don Tristan de Luna who really was here first. And he said, what if he's not there? Then I said, you can ask him.
So it's settled.
You know, you get to like day 58 of session, 59, 60 of session, people are looking for a little bit of a diversion, a little bit of a distraction. There's all these funny little things that happen. I'll share some of other stuff with you that's even funnier. What's fascinating to me is that he went through this whole speech. I mean, it was like 8 minutes altogether, maybe a little bit long. He gets done with it, and he never stuck the landing. The landing is, and I hope you'll all come join us this summer in July when we have our 200th anniversary celebration of the founding of Escambia County. And he just kind of, I think that was the reason that he did the speech. Otherwise, it was pure diversion. But, you know, if that was the point, he kind of missed, he never did the follow-up. Oh, by the way, come on over to our house in a couple of months. 546 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. We're going to have Senator Broxton on the show this morning at 7:35. I'm Andrew McKay.
Jake, you know, it's interesting that you raise this. I myself found that I was still wearing my mask outdoors this week because it has become such a matter of habit.
Okay, so it's just a habit? That's the reason that he wears the mask? Like he's, you know, he can't change his behavior?
I think the president takes the CDC guidelines very seriously, and he's always taken his role as sending a signal to follow the science very seriously as well. You know, we do take some extra precautions for him because he is the president of the United States.
Okay. Whoa, which is it? These are two incompatible answers. Answer number one is, it's a habit. We all do it, which, frankly, is understandable. Okay, you spent a year wearing a mask, and so now you keep wearing it because out of habit, because, you know, it feels weird not to wear one. Okay, I mean, I don't do that myself, but I do understand that thinking, right? But then she says we do extra precautions for the president. Which one is it? This is either extra precautions for the president or it's his habit. Or, I mean, maybe it could be both, but these are undermining each other answers. Because if the truth is that it's safe for him to not wear a mask, because it's truth for everybody who gets vaccinated and is around other vaccinated people, indoor or outdoor, to not wear a mask, then why do you take extra precautions for the president? What is the need for extra precautions with him? This is the whole point Jake is getting at, is if the president can't be safe around other vaccinated people or outdoors wearing, not wearing a mask after vaccination, then why should anybody bother getting vaccinated if it's not going to change their lives? That's the point he's asking. And it's an interesting one because the president is a leader. Now, I said this a year ago. I said that I did not like that President Trump wouldn't wear a mask. I thought that it was counterproductive, that it would undermine credibility in the advice being given by the CDC, and that it will give a lot of the naysayers a reason not, which it obviously did. So he didn't follow the guidance, and it led his people, so to speak, to not follow the guidance. And now Biden is doing in the other direction, more towards the cautious side rather than to the sort of the liberated side, if you want to think of it that way. And that's also going to cause people problems when it comes. Because this is, you know, what he's saying is that the vaccine's not enough. 437, especially when outside or around other people who have also gotten vaccinated, contrary to the guidance. 552 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Mark Jacobs is in the newsroom with our headlines. Mark?
A tornado leaves behind a trail of destruction in northeast Mississippi. A twister tore through Tupelo last night, damaging homes and businesses. Reports of roofs torn from homes, downed trees, power lines. So far, though, no reports of any injuries. A South Carolina senator thinks police reform is closer to happening than ever before.
In a way, this time, my friends on the left aren't looking for the issue. They're looking for a solution. And the things that I offered last year are more popular this year.
Speaking on CBS's Face the Nation, Republican Tim Scott says lawmakers this year are more intent on making communities safer. Wow, this is a big fish. 6 foot, 10-inch fish.
Oof.
Back
you
in
can
the
start
Detroit,
that fish at center.
Back in the Detroit River after being caught last week. It's a sturgeon believed to be a female who's been roaming the waters there for over 100 years. They note the real-life river monster is one of the largest sturgeon ever recorded in the U.S.
Does it give a weight?
It does not.
I mean, that's got to be, what, 300 pounds? 250?
I have no idea.
Good Lord.
6 foot, 10-inch sturgeon.
Can you imagine? Pulling a fish like that in?
Gee.
Oh, enough to... I mean, wow. I'm impressed. I'll just tell you, I'm impressed. All right, Mark, thanks so much for the update. And they let her go. So 100 years from now, that'll be the... What lake was it?
It was in the Detroit River.
In the Detroit River? Yep. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, so that'll be Nessie the Detroit River Monster.
Yep.
Fair enough. All right, 5:54 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Oh, this is kind of an interesting one. This is what you're going to start to see in California politics running up to the recall and the, you know, whoever might replace Gavin Newsom. So, Caitlin, formerly Bruce Jenner, is obviously in the race. And I've mentioned this before, that Jenner is a conservative, generally speaking, politically. A supporter of Trump, in case you don't remember that. That was a problem, right? So now Caitlyn Jenner has come out and said that she does not think that biological boys should be in girls' sports. Which is, you know, you typically think of like the transgender political platform, okay? The pro-LGBT, right? LGBT, T is transgender. That includes an affirmation of all possible outcomes favoring the trans person according to their desire with their now gender identity. And Caitlyn Jenner says, nah, which is an interesting one because, of course, Bruce was the decathlete, right? This world famous, amazing athlete. And, you know, says, I didn't expect to get asked this on my Saturday morning coffee run, but I'm clear about where I stand. It's an issue of fairness, and we need to protect girls' sports in our schools. So very interesting because, you know, the analysis goes something like this, like how many Republicans are going to vote for Caitlyn Jenner? Being that Republicans generally aren't big fans of the transgender concept, but being a Trump supporter, maybe, right? But obviously this puts Jenner at odds with the Democrat base, which might otherwise be supportive because of the trans person, and yet now taking a side. Here's what I think is fascinating about all of this. Here's the real question to take away for me. Is will Caitlyn Jenner be supported by the people who always say, stand up for what you believe, even if it's unpopular, when that position is unpopular to people who are pro-transgender, right? That's going to be the question. Will they say, oh, good for her, or will they say, oh, she's not one of us? It's going to be interesting. So I still don't think the Randy Quaid thing is all that significant. But there will be other people in this race before long. 5:56 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay.
It's time to turn the page and kick off a new year with delicious foods at Great Southern Restaurant Group.
Join them this Wednesday morning on the Pensacola Expert Panel when Great Southern Restaurant Group, home to the Fish House, Atlas, Jackson's, Angelina's, and Five Sisters, will discuss their upcoming menu additions and many other delicious events to mark on your calendar for the upcoming months. That's this Wednesday at 9.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
So we always talk about how many homes Christine Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty sell every year, and it is a lot. And the old promise was 30 days. If we agree about a price and your home qualifies, and not every home does, and you do have to agree about a price, which obviously, okay. But the old promise was 30 days, and now she says, no, 14 days. I guarantee 2 weeks. And in fact, she tells me privately, it's under a week. I mean, 7 days. If we don't sell a home in 7 days, something's seriously wrong, because they all sell that quickly. But the point is, she'll make this promise. The guarantee is 14 days at a price you agree about, that you have to agree, and your home has to qualify, or she'll pay you $5,000. That's where the market is, but not just where the market is. That's where her team is in their expertise of knowing how to price homes effectively. And by the way, not always lower prices, right? Sometimes you got to price it up to get the attention of the people who would really be interested in it. The point is, they know how to do this. They know it cold, like it's a science. 723-9158 for Christine Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty. 723-9158.
Change.
You're on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Oh, 3M lost this lawsuit that was going on here locally in Pensacola. $6 million. I thought it was seven. Punitive damages. Oh, yeah, punitive, and then plus some additional compensation. This is over the earplugs. Oh, this is three plaintiffs, and there's like 200,000 more in the wings waiting. There's going to be another larger class action lawsuit coming up starting about a month. This is going to be a lot of money for 3M. Basically, the short version is they knew there was a defect in these earplugs that the military people were using, and there was ear damage as a result of.